From the last time we spoke about wealth and fixed income on this same podcast, market cap of multiple wealth tech companies would have doubled.
Our financial services penetration is lower than anywhere else in the world.
Cross-sell stack is actually built in.
I'm forgetting who that race car driver was, but I remember someone asking him what was the most important part of the car, and he actually said the brakes.
Everyone says that everything compounds, right? Our consumer team says consumer businesses compound. Our SaaS team says SaaS businesses compound. So what is really different about financial services business?
Just like there is sort of tech debt, I think it's similar on compliance. I've been on record saying fintech is dead, adding to this saying long live fintech. And what we mean that when a queen or king dies and you say queen is dead and long live the queen, it essentially means that there is a new queen or a new way of building fintechs and financial services, which is coming. And that's what is going to continue to compound and create these large businesses.
Hi everyone, welcome to Matrix Moments. This is Anand. I love reading and learning about financial services and partner with founders building in the space. With me, I have Vikram. He has been investing in startups for more than 14 years now, across sectors, needs no introduction. Today, we'll be speaking about Financial Services India Outlook. If you talk about trends, there are seasonal trends, like right now we have elections, IPL, hot weather, and then there are some all-weather trends, which is financial services. It's always in the news, front and center. From 2018 to 2022, I've been investing for last 5 years. If I see from 2018 to 2022, it was in the news for explosion in digital payments, in unsecured lending. Last 2 years, it's the regulation which is taking front and center. As we go through this boom and bust cycle, Vikram, you have always been bullish on this sector, deploying top dollars, even in boom cycles, even in bust. What is it that makes you excited about financial services?
Thanks, Anand. It's really good to be here again. And I must call out these fancy new clipboards that we have, which have Matrix at the back. We've got lots of feedback from a lot of viewers that our sheets look very ugly on podcasts. And thanks to the marketing team for doing this. I think I want to actually center everyone on sort of how financial services companies are built and also, you know, where we are in the journey as a fintech ecosystem. You know, if you look at the historical data set, and hopefully we can have some of these slides in the back as we talk through them. If you look at financial services business, let's take an example of something like Visa. In the first, I think the 10-year period between 2008 and 2018, and before that, I think Visa was around for 30, 40 years, they built about 40 billion in that first. Then in 10 years, they built about 250 billion of market cap. Then in the next 5 years, like clockwork, they built another 250. So 10 years, 250, then 5 years, 250. So financial services companies compound even faster off big scale. Similarly, closer to home, HDFC, if you take that same period, 10 years, 2008 to 2018, 70 billion of market cap created. 18 to 23, 80 billion of market cap created. So again, similar story, huge company, takes some time to build, then 10-year journey, which compounded very fast, 5-year journey compounded even faster. So let's take a look at the ecosystem. It's been about 10 years of fintech. Many large companies have gotten created, and you can see that in the chart behind me. And about 100 billion of market cap has gotten created. And then you see the other chart of the incumbents, there's 600 billion of market cap that has gotten created. And like everywhere else in the world, as fintech starts penetrating deeper and deeper in each category, some of these companies on the right here will move to my left. And that's what's supremely exciting. And therefore, we need to keep in mind that we are still very early in the compounding journey of the Indian ecosystem. Not every company will become large, but a lot of the current companies where questions are being raised on how large these can be, if you let them compound, these will become very large companies. So I know we're going to get into more on what compounding means.
Yeah.
So I want everyone to take away, everybody takes away two things. One is compounding and the other is penetration. And I'll come to the second part on this penetration journey.
Vikram, before we get deeper into compounding, I would like to push you a little bit there. Whatever you are saying is historical data set. Last 12 months, if you see how the ecosystem has played out, a lot of people who argue that fintech is dead. We are meeting a lot of financial services executives who are actually now going and building in consumer, some of the other sectors. What is your point of view on this speed bump? Do you think that this will significantly slow down the compounding?
So I think it is just that, what you said. It's a speed bump.
Yeah.
So speed bump in the road is meant to slow you down so that you take time to get over that speed bump. And then once you're confident, then you start moving faster. And that's what's happening. So is the regulator worried that there's a whole set of companies which are growing too fast and therefore compounding the risk in the ecosystem? They are worried. And should they be worried? I think they should be worried, because there are different bad actors. There is not enough risk and compliance built into a lot of business models, and therefore they are worried and they put up these speed bumps. Now, if you take, let's take the last 15 years, how many speed bumps have there been? Right? Let's take from 2008. There was the global financial crisis. Then in 2010, I remember we had invested in Muthoot.
Yeah.
So we had a gold loan crisis. Then there was a microfinance crisis. We had invested in Basics. Then there was an ILFS crisis, which I lived through while being on the board of Five Star. Then there was a Demon crisis. And then there was COVID. And then there are some regulatory headwinds. So almost every 2-3 years, by the way, you have a speed bump. So if you're a financial services founder or a fintech founder and you're driving a car which doesn't have brakes, it's a problem. Yeah. So you need to learn how to navigate these speed bumps, because they come all the time. And your role is actually to slow down. And almost each of these speed bumps is an opportunity to overtake your opponent.
Yeah.
And so in every mini crisis like this, there is a changing of the world order. And the best founders and the best companies grow from number 4 to number 1 right after they navigate the speed bump.
Yeah. And when you talk about brakes, I often get this question from early stage founders. Do they need to have these brakes installed then in their car from the start? Or is it something they can do it later? The reason I'm asking is because there's a lot of cost which also goes with, say, acquiring a license. So what would be your recommendation to an early stage founder? Do you think that they should be on the regulation from the go? Or they should first experiment, get to some scale, and then apply for a license?
I'm forgetting who that race car driver was. But I remember someone asking him what was the most important part of the car. And he actually said the brakes. Because, you know, the later he brakes and the better he does, he would win more races, right? And it is a little bit like that. So if you don't build the cost of compliance and regulation into your business from the beginning, and you assume that you can drive this fast, or you can navigate these turns that fast, and suddenly you're faced with completely new challenges and you haven't built the cost of compliance and into your business, you can't navigate those challenges.
Yeah.
And so I think it's never too early to build that cost of compliance. Now, you don't build your end state compliance cost in day zero. But if you don't have that mindset and if you're not building the right compliance levels for each of those stages, I don't think you can catch up.
Yeah.
Just like there is sort of tech debt.
Yeah.
And tech debt is essentially that you've built a large business, but your tech doesn't keep up. And then you'll have 2-3 years where you're just rewriting the code for tech debt. I think it's similar on compliance. And I would argue that it's very hard to catch up on compliance and regulatory debt.
Yeah. No, just as you build a tech stack early on, for my advice for people building in financial services is to think early about your regulatory stack. What are the combination of licenses you want to go with? And plan it out. I have a regulatory roadmap as well, and get the right license at the right time. And on scale and regulations, I've heard you point this out on multiple podcasts, that even the regulator is thinking on scale-based regulations, and they have come with guidelines for NBFC, and similar guidelines should come for all subsectors, where you can keep the brakes in line with how your business is growing and at your size. So coming back to the subject of compounding, Vikram, I would like to push you a little bit there, because everyone says that everything compounds, right? Our consumer team says consumer businesses compound. Our SaaS team says SaaS businesses compound. We are talking here about financial services business compounding. So what is really different about financial services business?
See, I think every investor at every stage wants to invest in companies that compound. And what that means is that pretty much with anyone running the company, that business will just grow like clockwork without major risk happening in the system. So obviously this is a utopian view of the world, and founders are extraordinary people who are needed to make these businesses compound, and that's our belief as Matrix India. Now, what's unique about financial services business is that these businesses can actually truly compound without actually growing the user base very much. Why is that? Let's take an early bank, early fintech. Core of that is to find a base of users. I'm saying users, it can be consumers or it can be small businesses, which we call customers. And you find them and you find essentially a base of good users. Who are good users? They have the right intent. They're making some money. They're stable. And then hopefully they're growing their income and they're growing their lives. Let's say you find a set of those people. Those people are working very hard in their life. They're growing their transaction spend. They're growing their assets. They're growing their lives and they're building their lives. And if you have gained their trust and they continue to use you as the financial services enabler for everything that they do in their life, you grow with them. So let's say you have extraordinary trust with the best 1 million Indians.
Yeah.
And they are doing really well for the next 10 years. Actually, all you have to need to do is serve those 1 million Indians after that point in time. They will keep growing and you will grow with them. That's the beauty of a financial services business. Now, it's very hard to do. One, which is to find those 1 million Indians.
Yeah.
And then to gain their absolute trust such that you're getting 80% of their financial services business. And then do that without letting a lot of risk build up in the system. Right? Yeah. Because you could get 100,000 of those Indians wrong and then lose all your money on those, right?
Yeah.
So if you're able to find that set of users at low CAC, high trust, then you can really compound with them. That's the beauty of the financial services business, because you're growing as a business because your users are growing very fast in their lives. So that's on the business characteristics. And that's the beauty of business characteristics. And it's a little bit true in SaaS and so on, because your expansion kicks in on every contract and so on. But I think this compounding is a lot more beautiful, because that person is just working very hard in their lives, and that's paying off in your business.
And also, Vivi, to add to your point, one thing that I find different from some of the other sectors, the cross-sell stack is actually built in.
Yeah.
You have wealth, you have lending, you have payments. If you have actually cracked one product line, the million user that you're talking about, you can actually very seamlessly go to the next product lines. But in some of the other sectors, you have to think harder as to what your next cross-sell product would be. And the second business characteristic I like a lot, you spoke about trust. Trust is needed in every business. But here, you are actually dealing with people's raw money, and there's a delayed gratification. You, in often business lines like wealth, insurance, you don't get anything upfront.
Yeah.
So once you have cracked it, you have the user for life. And that starts compounding late when the person starts getting benefits of those products.
You're talking about the P&L or balance sheet characteristic. You start with, in a lot of the financial services business, start with the balance sheet. And that balance sheet pretty much guarantees you an income for the next year, right? So from whenever you model these business plans, you can pretty much predict with very high certainty what the next year is going to be like, unless there is a big risk event. Because you know this is the balance sheet, you know this is the base of users, you know how much you can grow pretty much with that balance sheet and that user base. And then if you spend a little bit more money, how much can you grow, right? So,
got it.
And then there, obviously public markets love that certainty of growth. I want to talk a little bit about, I would say, what is the other part of this compounding, which is what leads to the compounding of these businesses. And let's talk about the capabilities that compound over a period of time for companies. And one of those capabilities, core capabilities in financial services, is risk. And the risk capability, as well as the risk that builds in your balance sheet and P&L in your system, compounds. So let's take a business which is steady. Let's take it as a 1.5% NPA business. Let's take a business that didn't grow as fast, 25-30% YOY, but the risk was just 1.5%.
Yeah.
And then let's take a business which grew 50% 1 year, 30% 1 year, and you know maybe grew faster than the other business. But then the risk characteristics were 3-4%, 1%, 5-6%, 1%. And if you put that P&L together, the first company which just maintained the compounding of risk capabilities and were very focused on risk capabilities compounding while maintaining slower growth will actually come out on top, because they don't have to, it's like, again, going back to the car analogy, it's a car that is going very fast, then has to brake a lot, then has to go very fast and to brake a lot, versus something that is growing consistently at a very nice average speed while maintaining the risk. I'm not even talking about the journey, but I think the scale of AUM and the scale of businesses that will be built by the first company with the risk compounding will actually do a lot better. It also seeps into the mindset of the people. It seeps into the mindset of the salesperson. It seeps into the mindset, of course, of the compliance and credit people. It seeps into the mindset of the tech people that we are a risk-first org. And therefore, even that mindset compounds over a period of time, right? So that's one in terms of capability. The second is, you know, you build systems and tech over a period of time. And all of these systems actually are built for scale. And they also compound from year to year to year, right? You built, let's say, sales productivity for this particular scale. If you start measuring, you know, how you know, rigorous your sales systems are in order to actually make sure that the risk is low, at the early stages, it might not make sense. But as that sales productivity compounds year on year on year, suddenly it looks like, oh, this is a very predictable growth engine. So I would say every one of these, risk is probably the easiest one where you can quantify. But I think every part of your organization and capability also compounds over a period of time.
Vikram, you have been investing for 14 years. I'm sure you would have seen a lot of these compounding journeys from their 0 to 1, 1 to 10, and how this has played out. Can you bring it to life with an example and maybe outside our portfolio? Because
I was going to say 5-star because it's a journey that I've been closely associated with, but I also quote it a lot. So let me talk about a company that I didn't invest in. It's part of my anti-portfolio, which is AU Bank. It was called AU Financiers at that point in time. I was young, first year of investing, met Sanjay Agarwal, who's the founder, tried very hard to actually make that investment. And I think they were about 500 crores of AUM at that point in time. You can check what the numbers are like, but roughly 500 crores in AUM. From 2010 to 2018, roughly about the time they went public, they grew to about 16,000 crores of AUM. So very large company. From then to now, I think they're at about 60,000 crores of AUM. And if you put those numbers together, the company has grown, maybe in that first 8-year period would have grown 40% YOY. And then in the next 6 years has grown about 30% YOY. So these are not extraordinary growth numbers. And that brings us to, even as financial services investors, what is the rate of compounding that you're expecting? And often we look at the rest of the startup ecosystem and where companies are growing, you know, 100% YOY, 200% YOY. And then you're like, oh, these financial services companies are just growing 40, 50% YOY.
Yeah.
I think 40, 50% is a great rate of compounding, especially if you're not raising a lot of money every year and you only have to come up for air to, you know, between 2 to 4 years and you keep compounding at that 40% rate. This is a great example of a humongous company that I missed, but has gotten created in the last 14, 15 years. And so if you just let these companies compound at that rate, you can build something really, really big.
Yeah, I often joke about that compounding actually hits hardest to the investors because very often we meet these great founders, great companies, and we can't cross the line for some reasons. And when we see them grow, we often go back and keep tracking that compounding journey and see where we made a mistake in not partnering with them.
I think many investors, and I think now it's in different blogs, have said it that the human brain just cannot actually comprehend compounding. Yeah. We just think in sort of simple interest terms versus compounding. And so, especially in financial services, if you apply that power law of compounding, you can just build humongous businesses.
Vivi, on this compounding journey, where is India today on this compounding journey?
I think we call it the middle journey.
Yeah.
And why are we calling it the middle journey? I think the second aspect of this, of where we are in this journey is where we are in each category. India is largely a penetration story when it comes to fintech and financial services. What does that mean? It means that most Indians who deserve financial services, deserve as in they have enough money, they're stable, they should get financial services, don't get real access to financial services. And so as a fintech, financial services, I use them interchangeably. All you have to do is to go find the next Indian who you have to serve really well. And if you serve really well, you gain their trust, they will do well in their lives and they will keep making money for you. So it's largely a penetration story. And I think we'll put up this chart on across every category, yeah. whether it's credit card, whether it's insurance, whether it is private credit, which is SME, whether it's even Demat account, which has seen a big explosion. Everywhere, our financial service, apart from sort of payments and bank accounts, our financial services penetration is lower than anywhere else in the world. And now if you see the forward 5 to 10 years on how fast the country is projected to grow, we should see each of these categories grow really, really fast. By the way, it's already showing up in the existing numbers. If you take all these categories over the last 3 years, they've grown 2x.
Yeah.
So you're seeing that growth journey already getting started. And it's just because you're finding the next user, next Indian, and providing great financial services to them. Overall, there's a thumb rule on some of this. On financial services as a category, will roughly grow 2x, in some categories maybe 3x of GDP. And the category leader will be a 1.5-2x multiple of that, right? So that gives you a sense of how much growth is coming in financial services. So overall, as an ecosystem, we're still very early in that driving penetration of financial services. So there is just huge headroom for growth. So that's one part of it. Second is, what does it take to build these capabilities? I think overall, as an ecosystem, you know, maybe we've grown too fast over the last 2-3 years, where we have driven financial services penetration very, very fast, but maybe not built in the cost of risk, fraud, then compliance regulation into that. And it's a good pause to take. And even when you're pausing, you're growing 20, 30, 40%. So it's not really that much of a pause. It's a pause relative to how fast you were growing.
Yeah.
But I think you're actually getting to that natural rate of compounding.
Yeah. No, yesterday only I was checking from the last time we spoke about wealth and fixed income on this same podcast, market cap of multiple wealth tech companies would have doubled in last 6 to 8 months. So it's happening as we speak.
That I keep telling you is not sustainable.
And we have a separate podcast on that.
Yeah.
And we'll cover that. We have different views in the team.
Yeah.
And we'll cover that. Lastly, Vivi, what would be your suggestion for someone starting today? How do they set themselves up to get on this compounding journey? What are the things that they should do to be benefited by this compounding sector and the journey?
I think when I think of rate of growth of the company, the rate limiter to that is the rate of growth of the founder and the top team.
Yeah.
And how fast they are growing. So depending on the capabilities of that top team, if they're tech and product first founders, they need to invest in getting that financial services talent and muscle and build that into the organization. Let's say it's financial services founders, they need to actually get top class tech talent and then make sure that all of them are growing together as a team, because that will drive the growth of the organization. So getting that talent engine right, and then it goes down to, you know, compliance officers and risk officers and so on, right? So I think that's one part of it, which is to understand that talent at scale. It's a good example is a company that's very close to home and close to heart, which is Razorpay. Very young founders from IIT Roorkee, very early on, realized that if they want to build a scaled payments business, they would have to import talent from the financial services ecosystem. And they did just that. And you can see in the top team today, there are multiple people from very large organizations, as well as NPCI and Visa and so on, were all in Razorpay and they needed to build that muscle. So one is that in terms of talent. I think the second part of this, it is a pretty crowded market. It's not that this market is very easy.
Yeah.
But having a very, very nuanced understanding of the customer segment and their needs and figuring out what is the right wedge in their lives where they need something which is a true, true pain point, right? And it could be, you know, otherwise I've seen people come in and say, hey, we are doing short-term personal loans or I'm going to do long-term loans.
Yeah.
But to say which segment, what is the need in their life? Why are they not getting it? Are they not getting it because they are very high-risk borrowers, or are they truly not getting it because it's hard to serve them and you have figured out a wedge to serve them? I think that nuanced understanding of customer segment then leads to lower CAC for you than others. And because you've provided great financial services, they trust you. And then that journey sort of begins.
Yeah. Yeah, there's enough content about three Indias, India 1, 2, 3. But what we actually see in practice in financial services, there are 10 Indias in each one of these as well. and having that nuanced understanding of your customer TG sets you up for success. With that, if you have the right team, you get on that compounding journey. So before we close this, Vikram, would love to get your closing thoughts.
I think I've been on record saying fintech is dead and then adding to this saying long live fintech. And what we mean that just like, you know, when a queen or king dies and you say the queen is dead and long live the queen, it essentially means that there is a new queen or a new way of building fintechs and financial services which is coming. And that's what is going to continue to compound and create these large businesses. That's why we say long live fintech.
Thank you, Vikram.